Good afternoon and good morning if anyone is dialing from overseas. This is Jerry Delmasier speaking, and I've also got my partner and COO of Copper Street Capital, Justin Bull, on the line. If later on when we get to questions, people would like to talk about any of the sort of infrastructure issues and other stresses that we're seeing in the financial services industry thus far. A quick reminder as well that this is being recorded. So if you do ask questions, it will be on the record. I want to start out and just give a bit of perspective before turning it over. First of all, on kind of the market event that we've seen impact on the economy. Talk about there's been a lot of question around the 2008 comparison as the most recent sort of crisis. Look a little bit at the consequences here. Talk about outlook and specifically and running through this whole session will be the impact on financials, primarily European, but you know, we can discuss anything that that might be on your mind with respect to globals. So perspective. This you know, the scale and the speed of this risk asset sell-off is unprecedented. The closest thing that comes to it is probably the what has been called the crash of 87, but really was just a giant correction from very elevated levels. And in that period over or in that time, over a less than 2 month period, we saw a 35% correction in U.S. stocks. Important to note that even though there was much fear that, as in 1929, that this crash would lead to a major economic catastrophe, that never happened. But it took two full years before valuations recovered. And allowing for kind of the compressed cycles that we have, it's probably not a bad place to start as a kind of as we think about potential reactions. And we'll come back to that in just a little bit. We've also seen a significant disruption in liquidity, both of markets as well as in the credit transmission mechanism. Now, some of that is a bit surprising when you consider how much liquidity had been available in the period before the markets started faltering. But it's very clear that away from the regulated sector, there are disruptions in the financing of non-bank financials. And given that a lot of private credit is also going to businesses, smaller businesses and real estate projects and various economic activities that are likely to be disrupted, this whole sector of the credit market is probably the single biggest risk issue out there right now, and a failure to recognize it, I think, brings the risk of pollution and contagion into the broader economy and the broader financial sector. The other aspect, of course, of this is that we really don't know the scale of it, and in large part because there was active promoting of non-regulated activities and a lot of activities being pushed out of banks after 2008-2009, we've now lost sight of just exactly how much of this risk is out there. In terms of the market illiquidity, it's been profound in credit markets, which to a certain extent has always been a characteristic of credit markets, even in pre-crisis days. But the degree to which we've seen even illiquidity in treasury markets and other asset classes is extreme, and undoubtedly has contributed to the increased volatility that we've seen. After this is all said and done, there'll be a great deal of discussion as to causes. Clearly, some of the regulatory reform initiatives that stripped the ability of the market makers and intermediaries to provide liquidity, both by restricting capital and rules which restricted their activities, will undoubtedly be questioned. But that's not really an issue today. I would expect that liquidity in markets will improve as the supply-demand imbalance of risk positions also stabilizes, but I think it will be some time before we have fully functioning markets. A brief word on 2020 versus 2008. I think at this stage it's fair to say that the shock to the economy in the current situation is more profound, in the sense that the 2008 situation, which was largely driven by a contraction of credit, had been brewing from the first quarter of 2007, and you also had massive problems with the solvency of financial instruments that were backed by inflated collateral values, and indeed you had thinly capitalized banks with banks and other financials with very highly geared balance sheets. What's happened now is, in essence, from one day to the next, a perfectly viable business, has been rendered out of business, and so that's why we are seeing shocking economic data that certainly has never been seen, because this has just come all of a sudden. That being said, we were already dealing with a financial system that had extraordinary amounts of liquidity in it, unlike every other recession that was preceded by tighter and tighter money and ultimately a constriction of credit. This has been an exogenous shock. And therefore, you know, one would expect that given the degree to which there have been public sector pushes to support the general economy, the large dislocations and disruptions should be contained. The question is, what are the, you know, the risks that policy mistakes or just decisions that are made either to maintain shutdowns that are too long or indeed too quick, and therefore we see a return of spiking cases at some stage in the future. And the other point I would make is that the risks in non-bank financials are still unknown, have not been manifest, and therefore are not as obvious to policymakers, and therefore we may need to see some more damage before we get any kind of adequate policy response. In terms of the consequences, certainly for the markets, while we may see a rebound at some stage in the near term, and perhaps we're in that now, I think this is something that will take a long time to work through. We really don't know the full consequences. We don't know what new regulations and other rules that will be imposed will manifest themselves and how those will actually impact economic activity going forward. And there will have to almost certainly be an adjustment period that will take a considerable amount of time. So I think you could quite conceivably get a 20 to 25% bounce off of the bottom, and I'm using U.S. equities as a sort of a rough benchmark, but before we get back to the levels that we were at, I think will take a considerable amount of time. We've seen even, the private equity funds that collectively have a great deal of liquidity, and given valuation changes, you would certainly expect to see, public to privates increasing at a certain point. Most of them, for the time being, are minded with their own portfolio companies, and of course we have a whole array of technology businesses in some cases that have benefited, in other cases that were predicated on the world as it existed, pre February of 2020. The other consequence here is that we have once again entered a period of considerable central bank balance sheet expansion and monetary expansion. So the whole question of exit strategies and tapering and all of those things have been rolled forward once again. And, you know, at a certain point, people start to question exactly what is the limit for for quantitative easing and modern monetary theory. So that's all in the future. On a more prominent note, and certainly much closer to us time-wise, is the political impact. This is yet another challenge for the EU. On the one hand, will test the mettle of the collective unit to respond, and it does present an opportunity to come together. On the other hand, if the perception that it hasn't been handled well sort of becomes the narrative, then this is just further fuel for the populists. And we know that there were strong movements in a number of the countries, Italy certainly no exception. And the fact that Italy so far has borne the brunt of this clearly raises the political stakes. Not an issue now, but it's something that will be a factor as we emerge. In terms of the outlook, it feels in many ways like we are in the peak of the panic. If you think about this one-time economic adjustment that we're seeing, these PMIs coming out with changes from plus 54 to minus 12, or today the spike in jobless claims from 200,000 to 3.2 million. We have to get through this cycle of adjustments. This morbidity around sort of watching the number of people fatalities on a country by country basis to see where the trends are is just awful. But unfortunately, we need to get through that and get some sense that we are seeing what the worst of this impact will be. And then finally, as positions reach a more natural state of equilibrium, and I don't think we're necessarily done with some liquidations, then but as we get to that more balanced state, then I think we can expect to see market volatility falling, and that certainly is a precondition for putting in a sustainable bottom in valuations. I suppose given the situation in Italy and the poor people there, the who at this stage are still bearing the brunt of the bad news. As we see it going through other markets, and Spain appears to be the new focal point. You know, is Italy the norm? And in other words, will we have to go through the same thing in all the markets, especially I think in the U.S. where it's the key? Or is it in fact an outlier? And clearly we don't know enough about that. And I think it's certainly, the market certainly will be very cautious and assume that the Italian situation is in fact the norm until proven otherwise. So that brings us to financials, which certainly in Europe have been hit extremely hard since call it the Italy weekend, 22nd and 23rd of February. Subordinated debt and AT1s in particular have been hit extremely hard, reflecting clearly some aspect of fundamentals, but also reflecting their status as the kind of the asset classes of choice, given that equities have been out of favor, certainly on a relative basis for the last 6 months since the ECB eased for the most recent time. And also, I think we've seen a lot of selling by kind of non-traditional holders of these securities, high yield funds that certainly would have seen stress elsewhere, as well as I think a liquidation driven by holders that have liquidity mismatches. So UCITS funds, being forced to sell and head for the exit in a market that is not that liquid in the best of times. As we look forward, it's our view that there's still some selling and redemption-driven selling in particular that is likely to occur, but that the worst is behind us. And in fact, looking at the underlying fundamentals of the sector, which has by and large recapitalized and delevered. I mean, there are still problem institutions out there. The sector is in much, much better shape. We do see a significant number of opportunities that are emerging. In particular, in the AT1 space, where the supply and demand of issuance has been, has dramatically shifted over the last few years. While this sell-off is in some cases of a similar magnitude to what we saw in February of 16, we have to remember that back then there were questions about the rules governing coupon payments and the very kind of legal structure of AT1s that since then have been largely resolved. Secondly, the supply demand, from a supply demand perspective, we knew that there were still about 300 billion of securities to be issued, and that has also largely taken place in the intervening period. And so while there still will be some new issuance and issuance under kind of the new Basel Pillar 2 regulations, the supply considerations are much, much more friendly to buyers. And so given what's happened to prices, it really this does represent a great opportunity. And certainly we have, having been fairly liquid coming into this event, we have shifted our focus, starting first with higher quality names and also higher quality securities, in particular securities that are coming up to a regulatory call period, either because they are legacy securities or because their trigger points are low, and therefore they render them obsolete from a capital perspective. And even with a slight bounce that we've seen in the last few days, we see a number of sort of four-year and in securities trading in the area of double-digit yields to call. Beyond that, the focus, as always, is on capital considerations and also business models that are likely to be more resilient in the immediate future. I would fully expect that there'll be skipped dividends until we kind of get through this whole period. But in the case of large dividend players that are facing potential credit issues, I wouldn't expect that it's more than one quarter. We don't expect to see stresses on the ability of banks to pay AT1 coupons, although it's important to note that at these levels, the market's pricing in a considerable amount of missed coupons. Away from that, there are also in the kind of non-bank financials, wealth managers, businesses with strong asset management businesses are likely to snap back quicker. And it's important to note that in this sell-off, and we're talking equities here, it's important to note that in this sell-off, pretty well everything has been hit by the same amount, as you know. In this kind of a liquidation, it's generally sell first and ask questions later, and so there is certainly a considerable amount of opportunity emerging out there as we kind of get through this period. And so with that, I'd open it up if there are any questions. Again, if everyone else can stay on mute, that would be great. Terrific. Well, thank you very much for dialing in. Hoping everyone and their families stay safe. And if anybody would like to have a one-to-one conversation or any further thoughts, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.